Good morning, members. We call this virtual meeting of the State Government Finance and Election Committee to order for February 16th, 2021. And pursuant to House Rule 10.01, we're meeting virtually. The committee assistant will take the roll call.
Chair Nelson?
Here.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Here.
Representative Nash?
Present.
Representative Bonner? Representative Drazkowski?
Present.
Representative Elkins?
Present.
Representative Greenman?
Present.
Representative Clevor?
Present.
Representative Kosnick?
Present.
Representative Mason?
Present.
Representative New Brindley? Representative Quam?
Present.
I see Representative Brindley's here. I didn't hear her say present.
Present. Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. Thank you. I just wanted to make note of it. With that, members, we're going to have this morning, we're going to have an overview from Minnesota Management and Budget of the governor's budget for the base presented. The House File 1032 has been introduced, which is the bill for the budget. And so with that, Ms. Britton or Rattan, if you want to introduce yourself for the record, and then you can proceed with your testimony, your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Fantastic. My name is Britton Rattan. I am State Budget Director at Minnesota Management and Budget. And I'm also joined today by Alicia Cowell. She is one of our, what we refer to as team leaders within the budget division and oversees the team of budget analysts that work on the state government portions of the budget. And Alicia Cowell will be projecting the slide deck up on the screen as well. So hopefully you all can see that. So I'm just going to give a broad overview of the governor's budget in its entirety, and then I will pass it to Ms. Cowell to walk through some of the more specific pieces related to the jurisdiction of this committee. So Alicia, if you could turn to the next slide. As you're aware, the governor's budget really focuses on being a recovery budget to the COVID-19 pandemic. And the priorities that the governor has really laid out in this budget proposal is supporting small business and driving economic recovery, ensuring students catch up on learning, as well as supporting working families as we recover from this unprecedented pandemic. Alicia, if you'll turn to the next slide. So this slide, shows the overview of the governor's budget for fiscal years 22 and 23 in terms of comparing to the November forecast as adjusted for the special session that occurred in December. So you can see in the change column how overall the governor's budget made changes on the revenues and spending side as well as within the budget reserve. And I'll talk about each of these in a bit more detail. But first, you can see the beginning balance is reduced relative to what we were projecting in November by $176 million. And this is due to spending that the governor is recommending in the current fiscal year. We will get into a bit more detail about the places where that spending is recommended, but it's primarily in the areas of public safety, small business support, and education spending. So there's $176 million in recommendations in fiscal year 21. The governor's budget is also increasing revenues by $1.663 billion. $1.636 billion of that is in tax revenues, and I will talk in a bit more detail later about those tax changes. And then in fiscal years 22 and 23, the governor is recommending additional spending of $1.303 billion. And this is really that spending that the governor is focused on responding to the COVID pandemic and ensuring we are making the investments needed to recover from the pandemic. So as we dive into those areas of spending, this is where we really see that focus on supporting working families, supporting small business, as well as investing in education to make sure students are catching up on learning. In addition, the governor's budget is using some of the budget reserve, but not all. You can see in this slide that the budget reserve declines in the governor's recommendation by just a little over $1 billion. $1 billion of that reserve use is part of the governor's budget solution, as well as the $38 million that's also reflected there is to meet the $100 million target for the Blue Ribbon Commission that was passed at the end of the 2019 session. And this is the commission to find savings in the health and human services area. Given the COVID timeframe around when we're making the recommendations for those savings, the governor did not adopt the full $100 million that was put forward by the Blue Ribbon Commission and instead advanced $62 million of those savings and used $38 million in the reserve to get to that $100 million target. And then you can also see here that the governor's recommendation includes a cap on the stadium reserve of $100 million. There has been significant growth projected in the balance of the stadium reserve, and so you can see $130 million is directed back to the bottom line of the general fund when we cap that stadium reserve at $100 million. So as you can see, the budgetary balance in the November forecast, as adjusted for the actions in the December session, showed a deficit of $883 million. With this governor's budget, there is $470 million on the bottom line at the end of 22-23, and that becomes a key component of how we work through the next biennium, what we refer to as the tails, and I will also have a slide later in the presentation that shows the position of the tails. So with that, we'll go into a little bit more detail, although I'll go relatively quickly so we can get to Alicia's presentation about the specific proposals in this bill area. So as I mentioned, the governor's budget is focused on ensuring students catch up on learning. I've listed here just some examples of investments in this space. This is certainly not exhaustive of the education investments in the governor's budget, but it hits on some of the significant themes. So the governor is focused on ensuring that there is a robust summer program for FY21 to help students catch up on learning. So $57.5 million in federal funding is dedicated in the governor's budget to expand summer programming in 21. There's also preschool for 4- and 5-year-olds at a cost of $20 million from the general fund to expand preschool opportunities for this coming summer. Additionally, the governor's budget increases the basic education formula by 1% and 2.5%. So 1% in the first year, 2.5% in the second year at a cost of $301 million. And this is really recognizing that schools are slated to get significant federal resources in 22, which is why the state level is lower in the first year and scales up in the second year. The governor's budget recommendation also includes holding the special education cross-subsidy constant. So essentially, this is the unfunded cost of special education that's borne by districts that they need to cover with their general revenues and resources. And this is making sure the size of that cross-subsidy does not grow. That comes at a cost of $73 million. The governor's budget also includes funding for student support personnel. So this is a new aid to fund student support, such as counselors, nurses, social workers, psychologists. It's an aid at $22 per student and has a base level that every district is assured to receive. And this would fund these school support personnel statewide. In addition, the governor's budget includes funding to maintain the current level of pre-kindergarten seats in voluntary pre-kindergarten. As you may recall, we funded pre-kindergarten, or a portion of our funding for pre-kindergarten, in the most recent biennial budget with one-time funds. And so this continues those funds in 22 and 23 to make sure we maintain the same number of pre-K seats available. There's also funding to simplify school levies and improve equalization of levies. And essentially what this is doing is improving the equalization factors for local optional revenue, operating revenue, and debt service equalization. When we have equalization factors set in law, the state share tends to erode over time. And so this essentially increases the share of state aid relative to levy in these formulas. And it really is targeted then towards lower property wealth school districts. The governor's budget is also very focused on equity and the opportunity gaps that exist in our education systems. So this is just one example of an investment in this space, but the governor's budget includes expanding rigorous coursework for Black, Indigenous, people of color students. This is a $10 million investment for grants to ensure we are expanding opportunities in this space. And I also want to just highlight a few higher education related investments. The governor's budget includes a workforce stabilization program. This would be administered through the Office of Higher Education, and it provides grants for tuition and fees to individuals impacted by COVID to return to a higher education program. And again, that's $35 million. And then the governor's budget also includes investments of $110 million in operating supports for our public institutions of higher education, $46.5 million for the University of Minnesota and $63.5 million for Minnesota State. Alicia, if you could turn to the next slide. So the second theme that I mentioned previously is supporting small business and economic recovery. The governor's budget includes $50 million in the current year. So this is one of those FY21 investment recommendations. For a small business loan program to assist those businesses that are hardest hit by the pandemic. This program would provide forgivable loans to those in consumer-facing entertainment and cultural sectors. In addition, the governor's budget includes $6 million, it's actually $3 million per year, for assistance to small businesses through technical assistance, capital support, and incubator spaces. In addition, there's $50 million for broadband expansion. So this continues broadband development throughout the state. There is additionally $5 million for Launch Minnesota, which is focused on growing Minnesota innovation economy by accelerating startups and attracting talent. And then there is, on the tax side, a $7 million angel tax credit, which is provides a credit for investors that are making equity investments in early stage companies in Minnesota. And if you'll turn to the next slide, Alicia, thank you. So the third theme that was mentioned previously is supporting working families as we recover from the COVID-19 pandemic. And as we've seen, the pandemic has really had disparate impacts on individuals across the state, and the impacts have been more extreme for those at the lower income end of the spectrum. And so the governor's budget includes a one-time payment of up to $750 for families on MFIP. This is paid for with federal TANF dollars. There's also a paid family medical leave program, which would provide wage replacement for family and medical leave and would be paid by an employer and employee paid premium. In addition, the governor's budget includes an update to the rate paid to providers through the Child Care Assistance Program. This would bring the rate to the 30th percentile of the most recent market survey. And this is paid for primarily with federal funds through the Child Care Development Fund. And then additionally, on the tax side, the governor's budget includes an expansion of the working family tax credit. And this is increases the amount of the credit for Minnesotans that are currently eligible for that credit. And it increases the average increase for the tax credit is about $160 per family. Then there's also an expansion of the first tier of the income tax. So this really targets those in the second, where the last dollar of their income falls into the second tier. So it's essentially making more of their income subject to the first tier of the income tax instead of the second tier. With that, Alicia, we can turn to the next slide. So this slide just provides an overview of the spending by bill area. This is kind of our traditional breakdown of how we show spending by bill area. You can see a significant portion of the investments is in the area of E-12 education, as well as in higher education, health and human services, and public safety. And again, Alicia will talk more about the investments that fall in the state government bill area in a moment. And if we turn to the next slide. So this slide really provides an overview of that $1.636 billion in revenue changes that I mentioned previously. I've already mentioned the increase in the working family tax credit. The governor's budget also makes those with an ITIN eligible for the working family tax credit as well. And I've mentioned the expansion of the first tier of the individual income tax as well as the angel tax credit already. So some of the places where the governor is increasing revenues, if you'll jump down to the fifth tier of the income tax rate. So the governor's budget is creating a fifth tier to the income tax rate. And this is for married filing, jointly filers earning over $1 million, head of household filers over $750,000, and single filers over $500,000. The governor's budget also includes an additional income tax rate or surcharge on capital gains. This is on capital gains and dividend income over $500,000. And you can see there that increases revenue by $486 million in 22 and 23. In addition, the governor's budget includes an increase in the corporate franchise tax rate, as well as a retroactive add back for previously taxed foreign income. And those are both reflected there on the chart. In addition, the governor's budget does include increases in the cigarette tax as well as the vapor taxes. This is really focused on the fact that research shows that youth are more price sensitive, and this would increase the price of these products. And so this is a dollar a pack tax on the additional tax on cigarettes, as well as a 35% gross receipts tax from retail sales on vapor products and devices. In addition, the governor's budget includes some modifications to the qualified data center exemption tax exemption for software. Essentially, this is narrowing that exemption, decreasing the period for the exemption, and limiting the portion of which is subject to the refund. And then the governor's budget also reinstates the estate tax exclusion back to the previous level. So essentially, it returns to $2.7 million. It's a decrease from the current exclusion of $3 million. It does also adjust the small business and farm property estate tax exclusion to maintain the current $5 million maximum exclusion for those estates. With that, Alicia, we can turn to the next slide. So I mentioned in that first overview slide the use of the reserve. This slide just provides an overview of the reserve changes in the governor's budget. You can see the reserve, the dark blue portion of the bar. That's the budget reserve. You can see the budget reserve declining from 21 into 22, we're at $2.377 billion currently. In 22, the reserve level would be $886 million. I talked about how the governor's budget is using $1 billion in the reserve, and obviously that decline is more than $1 billion. but that's because $491 million of the reserve was used as part of the budget solution at the end of the 2019 session. So we already have in current law that $491 million of the reserve will be used in 22. And so this adds an additional billion to that amount with the governor's budget. And then the FY23 reduction is that $38 million I identified previously due to meeting the $100 million target for the Blue Ribbon Commission. So the other piece of reserve change that you can see here is the stadium reserve. So you can see the stadium reserve, even with the $100 million cap, is projected to grow from 21 into 22. It would grow by a total of $130 million more if we hadn't put a cap on the reserve in the governor's budget. So the stadium reserve is just held constant at that $100 million number in 22 and 23. And with that, Alicia, you can turn to the next slide. So this just provides a long-term outlook for the governor's budget. This is kind of the first look we're showing you of 24 and 25, or the tails of the governor's budget. We often look at the structural balance or imbalance of the budget, and that's what this slide is showing. And so when we're looking at structural balance, we're just looking at the revenues and spending within that biennium. So we're not taking into account carry forwards, and we're not taking into account reserve use. So that's what that structural balance line is showing. So you can see in 22 and 23, we don't have structural balance in the budget. We still have a gap of $1.259 billion. That's because we are relying on carry forward into 22-23 and the use of the reserve to bring the budget into balance. And so the balance with carry forward and reserve use is shown on the italicized line below at $470 million. So you can see from this chart, the structural balance, there's still a structural imbalance in 24 and 25, although the size of that imbalance does narrow. And then in 24 and 25, also with carry forward, we still have a projected gap of $243 million, but it's narrowed from that structural level, and that's based on the carry forward of $470 million. Moving from 22-23 into 24-25. And with that, I will pass it to Ms. Cowell to speak through some of the specific changes in the state government bill areas.
Welcome, Ms. Cowell. If you can state your name for the record, and then you can proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Alicia Cowell, and I'm a team leader in the Budget Division. As Britta said, I will take some time here to just dive a little deeper on some of the specific recommendations in the governor's budget that are within the state government bill area. On this chart, you can see just a high level of the recommendations for fiscal year 21, the next biennium, 22-23, and then the out years, 24-25. For the constitutional officers, the governor is recommending $4.4 million in spending in fiscal years 22 and 23, and $12.5 million in 24 and 25. I believe the constitutional officers came before this committee last month and spoke to these requests, and the governor is recommending what they requested, so I won't cover those in detail today. For the cabinet agencies within this committee's jurisdiction, the governor is making several recommendations for the current fiscal year and beyond. I'll dive in deeper on the next slide for those. And then going just to the small boards and commissions, the governor is making several recommendations here. One, in the current fiscal year, the governor is recommending to cancel $86,000. Those are funds are just remaining from the Arts Board, which received an appropriation for relocation and moving expenses. That move is complete, and they no longer need this remaining balance. So that'll just cancel to the general fund. And then for the small boards and commissions, the governor is recommending an operating adjustment to maintain the current level of service delivery at those agencies. So the intention here is that the operating adjustment will cover the growing costs of salaries and health insurance, leases, IT, and other operating expenses for those entities. And then finally here on this all other, this is just a couple of items here, moving the responsibility of distributing public defender expense reimbursements from MNB to the Board of Public Defense, as well as reflecting the moving of the federal single audit responsibilities from the OLA to MNB. Oops, I'm sorry. And in total, the governor's recommending a reduction in appropriations of $5.4 million in fiscal year 21, and then $33.9 million in new spending for 22-23, and $34.7 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. So now I'll go into a bit more detail in the governor's recommendations for the cabinet agencies. With respect to MINUT, the governor is recommending advancing the Blue Ribbon Council's recommendation for modernizing and transforming the way IT projects are delivered at the state. With somewhere near 350 IT projects underway at any given time, this funding will enable MINUT to hire additional staff, invest in project and portfolio software, and provide project and training on industry best practices. So this will really enable MINUT and the state agency partners that it works with to improve IT project delivery and speed up and maximize the business value from those IT projects. And for that recommendation, it's $4.15 million for the fiscal years 22 and 23. The governor is also recommending an operating adjustment for MINUT for the general fund portion of their budget $229,000 for fiscal years 22 and 23. Additionally, the governor is recommending canceling $379,000 in fiscal year 21 from savings generated by MINUT from the state hiring freeze in fiscal year 21. The next recommendation is a cancellation of funds in the information and telecommunications account, more frequently known as the Odyssey Fund. So this fund is available for IT projects, and it's in the special revenue fund. However, there are projects that have been completed and funds remain. And so this is really just cleaning up the accounting and returning the funds to the fund in which the appropriation originally was appropriated. So it'll return $179,000 to the general fund, about $14,000 to the workers' compensation fund, and then $5,000 to the health-related boards fund. And then finally, the last recommendation the governor is making for MINUT is one that this committee has probably seen before. It's a pretty routine request to grant cash flow assistance. 2 MINUT, so $50 million of cash flow assistance from the general fund for the fiscal year 22-23 biennium. And there's no cost to the general fund because it's kind of like a loan that MINUT will pay back by the end of the biennium. And this is needed because there is a delay between when MINUT incurs the cost of purchasing a good or making payroll, and then in turn when an agency pays MINUT for those goods or services. Moving on to the Department of Administration, the governor is making several recommendations here. The first is $5 million in fiscal year 21 for admin to conduct an enterprise strategic plan for locating state agencies and for agency space consolidation and relocation costs. The goal of this proposal is to strategically plan for the long-term space needs of state agencies and to reduce the physical workspace footprint. And allow agencies to continue to work from home. So I think this proposal is really just allowing admin to plan for long-term view of what working on the Capitol complex looks like and what a more flexible work schedule will look like for agencies and state employees. The governor is recommending increasing the in lieu of rent appropriation by $624,000 each fiscal year to fund the increasing rent expenses for space on the Capitol complex and the governor's residence, where those entities don't pay directly for leased space. Similar to other agencies, the governor is recommending an operating adjustment for admin. This includes canceling in fiscal year 21 $300,000 in savings that the agency has generated from hiring freeze and other efficiencies, and then increasing the appropriation by $1.2 million to maintain the current level of service in the next biennium. The next item is Capital Complex Parking Fund shortfall. The parking fund that admin manages is projecting a shortfall due to state employees canceling their parking contracts and a significant decrease in meter usage. Therefore, to help alleviate the projected shortfall in fiscal year 21 and 22, the governor is recommending suspending the transfer from the parking fund to the general fund in the amount equivalent to the debt service payment on the Senate parking garage, which is $993,000 in those two fiscal years. And then finally, the governor is also recommending increasing the resources available to agencies for grant administration and oversight. This is a no-cost change, but it would allow agencies to retain up to 5% of grant funds for legislatively named and formula grants, and up to 10% for competitively awarded grants to fund that grant administration responsibility. This change would only apply to appropriations made for new grant programs implemented after enactment of the language. For Minnesota management and budgets, the governor is making several recommendations. One is implementing a payment plus rebate program that would allow state vendors to receive payments through a virtual credit card. And with this program, the state will receive a percentage of the payment in the form of a rebate. So similar to if you think about your credit card and rewards that you might receive through that. So the governor is recommending that the rebates, when they come back to the state, are deposited in the general fund to create some general fund savings, which we estimate to be approximately $1 million for fiscal years 22 and 23. Some of the rebate resources would be retained just to administer the program. The governor is also recommending transferring the responsibilities of the single audit from the OLA to MNB to do this annual single audit that's required by the federal government. And the resources associated with that MNB would use to hire an outside auditor to conduct the work. And that's estimated to cost $1.2 million annually. For the operating adjustments, the governor is recommending canceling $1.3 million in fiscal year 21 from savings generated from the hiring freeze and operating efficiencies of the agency, and then an ongoing increase of $1.6 million for fiscal year 22-23 to maintain the current level of service. And then finally, I mentioned this earlier, the governor is recommending moving the responsibility for distributing public defender expenses from MNB to the Board of Public Defense. This is actually an item that will be within the jurisdiction of the Tax Committee, but just one I wanted to quickly highlight here. Finally, the Department of Revenue, the governor is recommending an operating adjustment for the agency in fiscal years 22-23 of $10.7 million to maintain the current level of service. That is in addition to a cancellation of $8.2 million in fiscal year 21, similar to other agencies due to the hiring freeze and operational efficiencies that have been achieved. So that's, Mr. Chair, concludes my summary of the governor's recommendations for cabinets within this committee's jurisdiction, but Britta and I are available for any questions that members may have.
Okay, members, we're going to open up for questions, but before I do that, I missed getting the minutes approved. Representative Quam, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
I would so move the minutes.
Representative Quam moves the minutes from our meeting of February 12, 2021. All in favor of approval, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
We have our minutes approved. And now members' questions. I don't see any hands up yet. Representative Roskowski, I see you get the first shot.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Obviously, we've got an increase in spending here in a variety of areas. I appreciate the budget overview from the MMB folks. It seems really, a tone-deaf response from the governor. As hardworking Minnesotans that are oppressed by the governor's COVID restrictions, are they going to be put in a position to have to pay for these increases in the cost of government, where, again, government employees largely, I don't know, I still haven't met a government employee that has lost their job through COVID, not one. And many of them are working from home in their basement and individually have decreased costs in personal expenses, and I would expect decreased costs in expenses to their government entity as well. My question is, how much in this budget area that that you outlined, what is the total percentage increase that those numbers represent over last biennium? And the second question is, what is the actual spending increase over actual spending projected for the current biennium? What the amount that he is recommending in his budget, what does that represent as an actual increase in spending rather than an increase over the base?
Representative Ruskowski, who do you want to direct that to? Or
Ms. Rattan would be probably good.
Okay, Ms. Rattan.
I can get you the, you're asking for the percentage increase on the state government bill area. Is that the, just so I understand?
Yes, I was looking for what is the increase represented in the state government bill area, and then also what is the increase over actual in dollar amounts?
So you're saying instead of based on
the base,
our calculation of base, what is the growth in year over year?
Yes.
Okay. I don't have that broken out for the state government bill area in front of me, but we certainly can do that math quickly and get that for you.
Thank you, Mr. Tan. Representative Ruskowski.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Tan, do we know what the actual spending is projected for the current biennium rather than the base number represented there at 51 billion in base, right?
Yes, the base, you're correct on that. Let me thanks. My apologies, Mr. Chair. Let me just grab my fund balance, and I can tell you what the current biennium's spend is. So the spend in the current biennium for FY 2021 in the entirety of the general fund is $47.869
billion. Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
And then the base in 22-23 before the governor's rec is $51.112 billion.
Representative Ruskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Rattan. So members and those watching and listening, we in the current biennium, government is expected to spend about $47 billion. The base increase, the automatic increase that if the legislature does nothing that's already written into law, will increase the spending, if the legislature does nothing, to $51 billion. So it'll go from $47 to $51 billion. That additional spending is not enough for the governor. Instead, he wants to add another $1.3 billion on top of that, on top of the $4 billion that it's going to increase automatically. I find this, Mr. Chair, members, to be tone deaf in the fact that the hardworking Minnesotans that are struggling under the oppressive conditions brought forward by this governor are not able to pay for this huge government increase in spending. And I see it actually in this budget The governor is increasing his own departments and the departments of the state auditor, the state secretary of state, and the attorney general as well. I don't see, Mr. Chair, any effort in this budget area by the governor to decrease spending that even his department brings forward. You would expect some leadership from this governor that would actually say, you know what, Minnesotans are struggling. This COVID stuff and the reaction to it is doing horrible things to them. We need to lead by example. There is no leading by example. Government is plowing full speed ahead with a tone-deaf reaction to the hardworking people of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Representative Juskowski, if you, from my look at the, again, the bill that's in our area, the House File 1032, which is the governor's recommended budget, the budget we passed 2 years ago that FY, I get my FYs mixed up, but the budget year that ends on July, or June 30th of this year, our budget area was 95,581 total spending, a total appropriation, and that's not just general fund, that's everything. But the proposed budget for the next bite, or the next year, actually the next 2 years, is actually less than that. It's 94.04 and actually 94.04. So in our budget area that we are going to be overseeing, there's actually a decrease in the total appropriation. So Representative Nash, you have the next question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm unable to utilize video today because of at-home learning. Ms. Rattan, if you would, have you and the governor and the various commissioners explored various places to Representative Druskowski's point and the point that I've made every time folks come into committee? What cuts have been looked at dramatically? And I ask that because I serve on a number of boards for companies and not-for-profits and others, and everybody that we are working with has had dramatic tightening of the belt. And I'm just wondering, what's the perspective in the conversations relative to that? Because I don't see drastic cuts. And as somebody who served on the governor's Blue Ribbon Task Force for IT, I fully expected for some of the recommendations not to get put into the budget request because of a reflection of the sensitivity of spending. So maybe you could walk through that. And then my other question, the stadium reserve being capped, the stadium predated my arrival at the legislature, but as I understand it, there is a potentially large savings to be garnered if the stadium reserve is used to pay down the bonds to get the Minnesota taxpayer off the hook. If you could walk through the calculations that were used in that as well to think of capping that as a benefit for the state as opposed to the taxpayer of the state of Minnesota. If you could walk through those, I'd appreciate that.
Ms. Rattan.
Certainly, Mr. Chair and Representative Nash. Yes, budget reductions were explored, and there are budget reductions in the governor's proposal. There's about $150 million in reductions. You'll see reductions in health and human services space, as well as some operating reductions in certain areas, some reductions in grants that were not considered core to the function of the mission of the agencies. And there are also some reductions in the corrections space as well. And so, yes, we did explore and include budget reductions where the governor felt it was appropriate. To your question about the reserve growth is growing pretty dramatically year over year. And it is certainly at a level that it can cover any unexpected downturn in the revenues that are dedicated to pay the debt service payments on the reserve. And so that's really what we were looking at, is that that reserve was put in place to ensure that the payments could be made for the stadium without needing to access other general fund resources. And currently, the annual payments for the stadium are about $40 to $45 million a year. And so we have well over the amount needed to ensure that we can make the payments for the stadium and not need to build up that balance. You raise a good point that there is potentially the ability in 2023 to refinance the bonds, and that's still an option. In 23, I would defer to our Assistant Commissioner for Debt Management, Jen Hassemer, to give a more complete assessment of all the interactions there. But that can still happen. We can still refinance that debt in 23 with this current proposal.
And Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Rattan. And I certainly know that you're not the one that's cobbling these budgets together. You're just having to make the numbers work. But the budget that the governor has put before us also reflects a fairly healthy increase in revenue from an additional tax bracket that's being added in. So it's not all sunshine and unicorns for the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota. And I'm just... I want to echo the words of Representative Drakowski that we're growing the budget over the last biennia, and this is a fairly dramatic increase. And I will beat my drum again that this is not a budget that looks at the state of Minnesota from a taxpayer's perspective and says, we're all in this together, because we hear that refrain quite frequently, that we're all in this together. It's going to be quite punitive to a great number of people. And I, you know, not only are we increasing taxes, but we're kicking the can down the road to the tails quite a bit. And I forget the amount that you shared that's going into the tails, but it was eye popping. My pad is in the other room. I was in getting coffee. So, it's not a benign budget. It's not, it's really shocking to me where we are here. And, I have a problem with the conversation that the governor is putting forward as being one of, beneficial for the state of Minnesota. Folks are going to get clobbered. Business is going to get hit in the mouth. And, you know, the utilization of the stadium reserve, I think I would like to hear a greater and more detailed analysis of the potential benefits of not rating that. You know, it was treated very superficially, so perhaps you would be willing to get us the information on that. And I'm certainly know where I can go from the stadium perspective. I can talk to those folks, but you know, make no mistake, for those who are either watching or may watch this in the future, this is a huge budget. It's growing. It is not reflective of the needs of businesses in Minnesota. It is not reflective of the individuals in Minnesota who make investments in our state through keeping their wealth and utilizing the power of their wealth. And it is really unbelievably tone deaf to move forward with a budget proposal in a time where people are watching their businesses evaporate before their very eyes. They're losing their businesses that they have put hours and hours and hours in. And as I say, I'm a recovering business owner, having sold my business. I'm glad I got rid of it, because now I don't have to get clobbered by my own governor who's looking to keep his government running. So more of a soliloquy there rather than a question, but I think this is just a pretty scary budget. I'll probably have some more comments later, but Ms. Rattan, if you could get me or the committee that analysis of the stadium reserve not being rated, I would really appreciate that.
Mr. Tan.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nash, I think what I will do, if it's okay with you, is have our Assistant Commissioner Jen Hassamer reach out to you so we make sure we're getting you the material that you need.
Perfect. Thank you. And if she can share that with the rest of the committee. And Representative mm-hmm. Nash, I'd like to correct you on one thing you said. You said this is the governor's government. It's our government, and not just the governor's. That's the whole state of Minnesota. We are the people. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I suppose, and frankly, Ms. Rattan, I am sorry that the commissioner left you here to answer these questions by yourself. Probably many of these questions would be more appropriately directed to him. However, you are the one who is here, so I will ask, and I apologize, I don't remember what slide it was as you were talking about some of the increased spending. You said that some of that was to cover the growing costs of salaries. And I'm wondering if you have more, if you can talk more specifically about what the intention is there with the growing costs of salaries.
And Ms. Rattan, I think you said that's to cover the cost of increases in salaries and increases in costs of health care and increases in cost of rent and those things. Ms. Rattan.
Representative and Mr. Chair, thank you. Yes, so there is operating increases in agency budgets. What this was looking at when we made those calculations was essentially, even without contract negotiations, there are steps that occur. So it's looking at the calculation of steps as they exist in current employment contracts. As well as the projected increases in insurance costs, as well as the projected increases potentially in lease costs where those exist, as well as in minute rates. And so minute rates, Ms. Cowell is still on and could probably speak about this in more depth, but minute rates can increase for a whole host of reasons, but oftentimes it's due to software costs, things like that. And so it's looking at those core costs as well as additional increase, but below the rate of inflation to recognize just cost pressure growth on the cost of employees.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Tan, for that. You know, this budget, and I would say particularly the items that are under the purview of this committee, you know, in this committee, we are not talking about providing additional funding for healthcare. We're not talking about this. The purview of this committee is not increasing funding for our teachers. The purview of this committee is literally government. And it's incredibly disheartening that in this committee, we are talking about growing government in a year that families and businesses have been absolutely decimated by the governor's shutdown. You know, the governor himself said we use the tax code to either incentivize or disincentivize behaviors. And this budget disincentivizes behaviors when it comes to our businesses growing and thriving in the state of Minnesota. It's incredibly disappointing to see what the governor has done, not to mention one of the most regressive taxes we can see with the cigarette tax. You know, none of us are proponents of smoking, but the reality is a cigarette tax is one of the most regressive taxes that we can impose on Minnesotans. And you know, not only that, I mean, the tax incidence studies, you know, I mean, this shows, you know, there's the initial impact of taxes, but the tax incidence shows the final resting place of those taxes. And we know that that's predominantly paid by consumers through higher prices and employees through lower wages. You know, in a year that more than almost any other in recent history, we need to jumpstart this economy. We need to help family budgets. We are doing absolutely the opposite with this budget. And I hope that the governor will take a look at what he is incentivizing and disincentivizing.
Thank you, Representative Clayton Newman. Brindley, Representative Greenman, you have the next question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Tan. And I really appreciate this budget conversation and this conversation about government. And I think, you know, frankly, the services and support that government provides in every corner of the state is really critical. And I can't think of a more important time than for our state in investing in Minnesotans and in the supports and services that they provide. And I specifically want to get to, as we think about this, the crisis we're in, public health crisis, economic crisis, that's just exacerbating disparities we've seen. And the recovery, the K-shaped recovery, where it feels like folks at the top, corporations at the top are actually in some cases benefiting, and folks at the bottom and folks who are hurting the most need the most help. It would be helpful to hear how this budget, when we think about kids, when we think about families and small businesses, and I think, you know, to the point about what government does and what our agencies do, it'd be helpful to hear how this budget really gets to providing those services that Minnesotans are relying on in this recovery and as we build back, hopefully, to a more thriving future. So I guess that's my question, Mr. Tan.
Mr. Tan, and before you answer, one thing that Representative New Brindley said that is that we don't take care of increased costs for IT programming. We don't take care of the healthcare costs. Part of those are built into the cost of those departments doing their business. Just like a business, those increased costs, you can't say, well, I'm going to exclude those and not count those in what I need to raise through my revenue that I bring in. That's part of your overall cost of doing business for these agencies. So,
Mr. Chair, you've really misrepresented my words there, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Tan.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenman, thank you for the question. You're absolutely right. As we were putting together this budget with the governor, we were really focused on the fact that this is a time when government services are really needed. And there has been dramatic disparities in terms of the impact of the pandemic. And we've seen that bear out. And we've, in our work at MNB, we've even seen that in how the forecast has played out, in that we are still collecting income tax revenue at a level that we weren't anticipating last summer. And part of the reason for that is the fact that high income earners are faring better in this time than low income earners. And so we're not seeing it hit our tax revenues to the same degree as we were anticipating in May at the very outset of this crisis. And so this is a time when there are when the disparities we have are only exacerbated, and where certainly in this governor's proposal, he's really saying this is a time that government needs to address these issues. And so that is why there are revenue increases in the budget to support the spending, because that spending was deemed essential in order to address those needs. And so you'll see the focus in education spaces, as well as in support for working families, income supports through MFIP, higher education supports through the Workforce Stabilization Program to get folks retrained and back in the workforce. where needed. So yes, you're absolutely right. That really was the focus in this budget process is what do Minnesotans need in order to recover from this pandemic, and how do we address the extreme disparities that we've seen in terms of the impact of the pandemic?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, thank you. That's really helpful. One sort of to bring together, I think the last couple of points, just one sort of follow-up is as we think about those big investments, as we think about the budget as a whole and really I think de-siloing the way we look at how we're investing in Minnesotans, can you, given that we're in state of finance, can you explain a little bit more about how the agencies under our jurisdiction, how the budgets that you're proposing help deliver those services and help sort of through across the budget that are supporting Minnesotans and small businesses and our kids?
Certainly. And Representative Greenman, Mr. Chair, I can speak just to MMB, which is under your jurisdiction. I will tell you from my perspective, I have a team of staff that I've never seen work harder than they have in this current year at great personal toll and sacrifice. And the hours have been extraordinarily long, and there is certainly no extra compensation. And in a time of hiring freeze, we have, you know, managed through with the staff that we have. But it has come at a huge toll. But to ensure the government is delivering on all of these needs that are really ever present. I'm gonna, if you don't mind indulging me, I'm gonna use one example of a woman on our team. Her name is Angela Loat. She's a phenomenal staff person, was redeployed. She's a key leader in our division, but was redeployed throughout this process to go work with the testing team and make sure they fully understood all the financing mechanisms to stand up COVID-19 testing around the state. That's a position we obviously didn't fill behind, and everyone, you know, scrambled to fill her really key role at MMB. But this is happening all over the state right now. I think that's actually what the commissioner is testifying about right now in another committee. But it's really even though we're central service agencies, we have folks that have been putting forth just tremendous efforts in order to respond to the pandemic.
Thank you, Ms. Breton. Before we go to the next questioner, Ms. Roberts, if you want to explain the numbers that are in this budget bill that is our department or our committee, the budget that we have to put forward. And I know that's talking about our silo, but that's what we have. We have to pass out of here to get a budget for our piece of the overall budget. Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll review the numbers, and then I'll also, after the committee hearing, send you a link to these spreadsheets that we'll give you all the detail. For the current biennium, since Representative Drazkowski asked about that, for fiscal year 21-22, current projected spending is about $1.3 billion. The governor's recommended spending is, well, let me clarify, it's $1.318 billion, and the governor's recommended spending is $1.313, so that's a decrease of $4.6 million, and that's largely due to those savings that in the cabinet agencies that were discussed earlier. For the fiscal year 22-23 biennium, the base spending is $965,252,000. The governor's recommended spending is $1,216,000, and so that's an increase of $34,964,000. And I should point out, it's very, comparing between fiscal year 2021 and then the 22-23 numbers are going to be distorted by some large one-time spending that shows up in the MMB non-operating, and that's largely due to one-time spending related to COVID activities. So that's why the spending goes down so much.
Okay. Representative Greenman, were you done? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and also thank you for your clarifying and accurate statement that it's not the governor's government, and I eagerly await the next vote to rebalance the power. But on to the beginning of the what was presented, there's a lot put on, you know, education, and I just would like for additional information. What is the enrollment loss included in the $301 million increase in the formula? Because I think everybody anticipates there being a continued enrollment outside the public system because of all the schools that were shut down and other parents probably partaking in open enrollment. So that kind of information would be nice to understand the ramifications to you know, some of the other departments and government.
And Mr. Rattan, Representative Quam, that's part of the education's budget, but I'll let Mr. Rattan touch on that. From my understanding, even if those kids aren't in our public schools, they are in other schools, private schools, whatever, and that money that would go for the first student that would go to the public schools follows them to the school that they go to. Ms. Rattan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, so the enrollment numbers are really built into our forecast. So it's the underlying base captures that change in enrollment assumptions. Ms. Cowell might be able to pull up the exact numbers of change in enrollment relative to previous projections that we had in the November forecast, and we will update that again with the February forecast. And we have seen a decline in enrollment relative to previous projections, but I want to make sure we all understand how the education forecast works, and is in that it's a set dollar amount per pupil for the formula. And so the forecast then adjusted downward. So our base level of spending was adjusted downward already in the forecast to acknowledge the reduction in enrollment relative to previous projections. So what the governor's recommendation is doing with the education increase of $301 million that you're highlighting is adjusting the dollar amount per pupil up by 1% and 2.5% in the second year for those students that are generating the basic formula in our public school system. And so I just want to make sure we're understanding that the savings relative to previous projections were already accounted for in the forecast. And this is really addressing the dollar amount per pupil multiplied by the total number of pupils that are now baked into our forecast.
Representative Quam.
Thank you. And my several terms on the Ed Finance Committee, I understand that it's not per pupil. It also affects what districts, because of the impact of the formula for those districts, which I would like in the future some information. There's the $50 million for the broadband. There have been some winners and losers in this distance learning due to deficiencies in accessibility to broadband, and it might be nice offline to get the information to us of how much of this $50 million is to address those disparities and fix that. But that also brings in a related, we've got, Minute, and we've got the tax and all that complex structure. But simple clarification, there was an increase in revenue of $101 million, and it was related to data centers. And I remember back about a decade or so, IBM and others locating data centers in Iowa and surrounding states because of our tax structure on data centers and the capital investment thereof. So if you're having an increase in taxes anticipated, some clarification as to, is that increasing the cost, which therefore would cause more data centers to locate outside of the state, or is it some special calculation that we're improving the tax structure so that we'll have more new data centers? Some clarification, that's not an inconsequential $101 million. Thank you.
Mr. Tan.
Chair Nelson, Representative Quam, I feel like I should defer to the Department of Revenue indeed to get into the implications of that change, but just some history. The qualified data center exemption for software, my understanding it was enacted in 2011, modified in 2013. The impact of that tax change is well above and beyond what was thought at the time in terms of the amount of tax exemption that would happen as a result of that change. And so essentially the reduction in revenue was well beyond the anticipated cost relative to when that action was put in place back in 2011 and 13. So what this change is doing is modifying that exemption, tailoring it so it's smaller than it is currently, because it is rather significant currently and well beyond, I think, what the legislature understood as the cost when it was implemented.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The unintended consequences of tweaking that kind of capital investment to some businesses are very large in capital investment, and that was, I think, in response to some of those data centers opening and jobs moving from Minnesota out of state to try and balance it with the treatment in neighboring states. I'm just trying to understand if they fully thought through this readjustment and the possible impacts it may have on, you know, future job opportunities. But moving on to the next thing, which is MMB, it has a charge for doing the single audits. And federal funding includes funds, part of the funds are for administrative, which includes the auditing. So am I to understand that the MMB wasn't already paying for these audits that the legislative auditor had been doing? In other words, transferring money to cover those? If so, then it shouldn't be an additional charge to the budget, because you're just paying a different entity to perform those audits. Now, if we have over the years not been appropriately compensating the Legislative Audit Commission out of the federal funds, which are, again, earmarked a portion towards administrative, which includes the auditing function, it'd be nice to understand what the accrued savings to MMB has been by the legislative auditor carrying this burden.
Mr. Tan, and I don't know if he's got that right. I thought that's moving from the state auditor to the MMB, not the legislative auditor. And correct me if I'm wrong. Mr. Tan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, it is moving from the legislative auditor to MMB, and MMB will need to contract out for that service. I'm wondering if Ms. Cowell can speak a bit more to the background on this item, because I think she probably has more depth.
Ms. Cowell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Quam. So the intent here is to take our understanding that general fund resources appropriated to the legislative auditor to conduct the work of the single audit and move those resources to MMB for that same purpose. So it's not, I don't believe there's a function right now where the federal funds that go to state agencies are carved out to provide that service. It's understanding here that we're moving general fund resources to go out to provide the federal audit service.
Thank you. I guess you were right then, Representative Quam. Representative Quam, one more question, then I'm going to move on.
No, I think that's sufficient. I have additional details I'll try and get offline, and I'm just trying to better understand the thoughts and the actual details behind this budget, because some things are surprising me. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm going to start with a statement, and then I'll have a question after that. First, I would like to remind the members of this committee that the state employees who do the great work and help solve the problems that our businesses and families are facing, especially during this pandemic when a virus has attacked our state, happen to be our constituents. These are families, these are neighbors who live in each of our communities all across our state. And to speak of them as FTEs solely on a budget line is to ignore the contributions that they make to our state and the contributions that they make to the economy of our state. They are also taxpayers. They are also school families. These are our neighbors. So I want to make sure that when we're looking at a spreadsheet, right, every business person I have ever worked with knows that management by spreadsheet without looking at the full ripple effect is a fool's errand. It's easy to say two is more than one. Let's get to one. But that doesn't talk about the ripple effect. Now, I am a person who believes that you can only spend a dollar once, and we want to make sure that we create the best ripple effect for our state with that dollar that we possibly can, which takes me to my question. When I think back to the Great Recession, we know that many states did, in fact, cut their budgets to the bone, right? But we also know that when the states did that, there was a fall off in their economies. So my question to you is, when we have robust state investment in our families and in our communities, what does that ripple effect look like in our economies? You know, I've heard things like 100 state employees benefit 160 private sector employees. I'm not an economist. So if you could please speak to that positive ripple effect, what happens when we invest in our communities, I would greatly appreciate that. Thank you.
Ms. Raton.
Representative and Chair Nelson, I am also not an economist, and so I don't want to pretend to be one.
And you don't play one on TV, and you don't play one on TV either.
Well, I spend a lot of time working with our state economist, Dr. Kalimbakidis, and I certainly don't want to put any words in her mouth. But I think she would always emphasize that we need to look at both sides of the equation. We can't just look at the tax side, we can't just look at the spending side, that they both have implications, and reducing spending at the state government level also has implications for the economy as a whole. She will always point out in terms of stimulative spending, I mean, that's the federal government is able to do that spending without the tax increases, which always, you're able to do the positive without the tax increase side. So the state, the federal government is just more easily equipped to do that. That stimulative spending is something that she will point out. But certainly government spending does have that impact on our economy. Yes, it does have ripple effects.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to say I'm not someone who is generally known for quoting Trump appointees. I'll just be honest about that. But I will say that Jerome Powell, who was the chair of the Fed, said that when we reduce state and local spending, we further drag down our economies. And we saw this after the Great Recession. And spending by state and local governments account for 15% of our nation's economic activity, according to the Bureau of Economic Analysis. And then in Wyoming, Mark Gordon, the Republican governor, acknowledged the fallout to the economy after rounds and rounds of budget cuts in the state. So I want to make sure that we are investing in our people. And when I think about tone deafness, this is my concern. Is yesterday when I left the Capitol, I saw two things on my quick drive home. One, as I was turning the corner across the street from the hotel where many of our legislators spend their nights, there is a tent encampment. And we are in the middle of a polar vortex. And I thought to myself, what an incredible tax these families are paying. And that tax is in their comfort and in their safety and in their security of sleeping outside, because we have failed to invest in all of our families. And at the same time, we had a tremendous government response of fire and safety responding to the needs of anyone staying in the hotel across the street. And I just thought it was incredibly shocking to see the two pictures there, people outside in the cold and homeless, and then the emergency response that was being given to people who were inside and potentially in harm. It was just an amazing thing to see. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging my comments today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Claiborne. Representative Elkins.
Sorry, I've lowered my hand.
Okay, you were still on my list. Yeah. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to ask one sort of last question to I think what Representative Cleborne raised, which is sort of the idea, which I would say is sort of the penny wise, pound foolish. And as we think about the recovery and sort of what we saw in 2008 and 2009, and again, sort of focusing on the Department of Revenue and MMB and the core agencies that this committee oversees, but also that I think sort of make the other parts of our government run. One of the things that just to get more specific is, you know, we have heard, I think the Secretary of State talked about the resources that they actually bring in with the business services. I think that when we think about the Department of Revenue and the work that they do to actually collect revenue, one thing I just, it'd be helpful to hear and comment on in addition to the real sort of services and supports that Minnesotans rely on is how this budget and also potentially how any cuts that I think are being talked about would impact our ability to actually have those core services that help our government run, and also to be able to bring in the revenue and pieces that help support everything else.
Thank you, Representative Carl, or Representative Greenman. Representative Carlson, you had your hand up, then you took it down. Do you still want to have your hand up again?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, then.
And, yeah, and just kind of building on some of the comments so far. So, you know, the bill before us, one of what's under our current jurisdiction, are agencies that provide support to other state departments. So these folks, you know, and Representative Claiborne said it very well, that they're the invisibles. They're the behind-the-scenes operators that get the job done. So let's not lose sight of that. State spending is crucial to our overall recovery. You know, again, we mentioned the work on the part of state economists that show that austerity may solve a short-term budget problem, but it creates a long-term economic downturn. And that's been proven by economists from both political parties over and over again. The point that I want to kind of zero in on here is, while this budget does provide a path towards economic recovery for our state, it's also being paid for by those that have done well during this pandemic. Not everyone has suffered due to the pandemic. There are certain few that have done quite well, and I don't think it's asking too much for them to help it in terms of the recovery. And that's the budget we have before us today. To my question, with the just to kind of provide, I think, a more acute example. So, for example, the Department of Administration. I believe we saw in previous presentations that the state spends for contracting upwards of, I think it's $1 billion in products and services. If the testifiers could speak to where that money goes to, who is getting these contracts with the state that will help spur on our economic recovery? Where do those contracts go to?
Mr. Tan.
I want to make sure I understand your question, Representative Carlson. You're asking about the contracts that the state makes for services across state government, so the contracting function of admin?
Yeah, so basically just the idea that we are supporting Minnesota businesses with these contracts.
Certainly, yes, and Representative Carlson, that's correct. I mean, admin does operate the contracting function across state government and provides technical assistance and oversight of that function. And yes, it is with businesses large and small across the state.
And in addition to that, we know that admin also has, oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. We also know that admin has a program to help get some of those contracts to minority-owned businesses, to women-owned businesses right here in the state of Minnesota. So these are ways in which that we are furthering to promote our state's economic recovery. That's really the point I wanted to make, Mr. Chair. Thank you for indulging me.
Thank you. Representative Nash, if you want to wrap up, and then we've got 4 minutes left, I hope, but if you want to wrap up quickly, and then we can get on with this.
You bet. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I've heard a lot of conversation around sacrifice of people and great toll and sacrifice of government employees. And I understand that they have put in long hours. I understand that they have worked overtime. I understand that they have worked on weekends. And I understand that they have probably been away from family events and things like that. But so have the people that own and operate businesses that generate the tax revenue that previously had businesses located on main streets and second streets and first streets throughout the different cities that we all represent. And Representative Clavorn is correct. Yes, they are our constituents, and they are losing their businesses. They are losing their savings. They are losing their investments, their futures, the legacies that they had planned to leave to their family, to sacrifice, to pay for employees that many of them are keeping employed, even though they themselves, the business owners, are not taking a salary. So that's the sacrifice. I again, understand that many of these government workers have put in tremendous amounts of hours, but none of them have lost their job, not one. So if you want to have a really good, frank, direct conversation, I'm more than happy to line up some people from at least my district, and I know many other representatives would be happy to do so as well, from people from theirs, of people who have lost their business to this shutdown. You want to talk about people who are sacrificing? Talk to the person who has watched their livelihood vanish in front of them. It's gone. And they're asking just for the opportunity to open their business again. One of them reached out to me and said, Jim, when are you going to get to go back and be my voice in the legislature? Because you're not right now. The governor is. So this conversation and this hand-wringing and this emotional, heart-wrenching conversation about sacrifice. Do not forget where every dollar that is spent at the state level comes from. It comes from the wallets of Minnesotans
So let's not have this self-congratulatory, sacrificial conversation about government employees when you've got people on Main Street throughout Minnesota who are watching their businesses disappear. Mr. Chair, I thank you for this opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you,
Chair,
Representative.
Chair, my name was invoked. May I please speak to the comment?
One second. Representative Claiborne, quickly, and then we have to wrap up here. Representative Claiborne, quickly.
Thank you. So anyone who knows me knows that I work tirelessly for my community. And I don't care if it's the small business owner. I don't care if it's the state employee. Each and every one of these people matter. And I have constituents in Plymouth who lost their businesses in Minneapolis due to civil unrest that occurred from people coming in from out of state or out of Minneapolis. And I would ask all of us, when we're talking about helping small businesses, people who've worked hard and toiled day in and day out to create these businesses and support their families, that we look at them all equally. And we help each small business that is struggling to be able to get back on their feet. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And with that, members, it's 10 o'clock and we have to be off here. Our next meeting is Thursday, February 18th. We have a couple of bills up. And members, this is a lively discussion. Remember that this is the governor's proposed budget that he has based on the information he had from the November forecast. We will be building our budget off of the February forecast, which we'll be getting in a week or so. And members, so with that, it was a good discussion we had today. We are adjourned.